Nice.
Some cats, they know how to fight. Some cats run. I'm a thousand generations ahead of them. Cool as they come. See, all my suits are Calvin Klein. My lucky number 69.
Hey everybody, welcome to Drive Through HR. Brian Wimpen and William Tenskov coming to you live every day talking about what's up with HR and the HR world, like all over the globe. We go big. So, William, how you doing today?
Brother, I am doing fantastic.
Good, man. Good. Sun's shining. We're rolling. It's going to be a good conversation today. I can feel it. Some days I can just, today is the day. This is going to be maybe the best guest we have ever had on the show. That's
nice.
Something. I'm going to set the bar high. I felt a lot of confidence in pre-show. It might have been all my own, but that's all right. I get a little confused signals at that at times. But let's get to it. I want to hear what's up. So, Andrew Pearson, welcome to Drive Through HR.
Hello, thank you, Brian, and thank you, William. It's great to be here. I'm in London right now, and the sun is not shining. It just went down with a beautiful sunset a few minutes ago.
Well, that sunshine thing, that's overrated at times. I don't want to, you know, get too much into that, being in the UK, because we just, that's one of my favorite places. You were in one of my favorite cities on the planet. I came to love that over time. It's kind of like that cousin or that uncle you just love to see. That's London for me, so as odd as that may sound. But,
if you would,
introduce yourself to all our wonderful listeners, and then we'll get into what's top of mind for you.
Yes, sure. So as the guy said, this is Andrew Pearson. I'm the CEO of CloudPay. We're a provider of global payroll services. The company's been going quite some years, so we feel we know a lot about the whole complicated, difficult, and challenging area of running payroll across multiple countries if you're in a multinational organization, which, of course, everybody's increasingly so these days. The world continues to globalize. The number of multinationals goes up and will do as we go forward. So we're in demand, and we're having a good time growing our business well.
Nice. Let's do the what keeps you up at night twofold. Andrew, let's, from your perspective, running the business, what's keeping you up top of mind for you these days? And also your clients. What do you find is kind of keeping them up at night? What's top of mind for them?
Sure, yeah. So what for me, I think that a lot of people that come on this show will say this next piece, really. I'm talking about my own organization, but obviously I'm sure your shows talk about this as a generic area anyway, and that's talent management, how to hire enough talented people and motivate them and get them all moving to build a great company. We have got a great deal of opportunity. I'll talk about our customers in a second, as you asked. And getting some good people in this company with the breadth and depth of skills we require when addressing this reasonably complicated global payroll problem is really what I spend a lot of my time on. I spend most of my time today doing precisely that, thinking about and talking to some good people to join our company. When I think about our customers, really what is top of mind for them as it relates to us and what we do, which is obviously what I spend my time talking on them with, is really how to understand the heartbeat of their company, their people, from the point of view of the operational, taking care of them through payroll. And there's a lot of complexity when you're expanding. A lot of companies we're working with are going into new markets, pulling out of other markets, reconfiguring their business either organically or through M&A, and they're moving people around the whole time or hiring new people, and they need to get those people paid and need to get it done with some measure of control, staying in compliance and doing it in a way that isn't costing them too much money, which it is for many people. And it's a lot of detail inside of that statement, but all these issues keep up awake all of our customers, really, which is really any multinational on the planet.
Well, let's get into the complexities of global payroll. We take it here in the States, we take it for granted. If you want to get payroll done here in the States, there's any number of at least 100 options. You could just look it up in the phone book, you could Google it, etc. Fairly easy to then, you know, find a provider that can help you out with payroll locally. Globally, you've got employees in Brazil or in Canada or South Africa. Not as many folks do that. So if you don't mind, kind of give us the landscape of how global payroll, the different models that it kind of exist out there in the world, like how does one actually go about pulling the levers of global payroll?
Sure, yeah. So actually, for you know, virtually all countries on the planet, there is some semblance of the of what you say you experienced there in the U.S., which is there's a bunch of options. But that's actually the problem, because what we see when we look at the marketplace right now for a large-scale multinational organization is they've gone and done that essentially for every country. So what they've really done is acquired themselves a patchwork of ways of getting their people paid. And this can be, in some cases, many different ways per country. Think about a company that's grown through M&A and acquired 4, 5, 6 different businesses in major countries, maybe a couple of businesses that are multinational themselves. They can end up with 5, 6 different ways per country across 30, 40, 50 different countries to do payroll. So the kind of patchwork that they end up with is really the thing that keeps them up awake at night, because it's unwieldy, it's unmanageable, it's costly, and it brings risk because of just too many moving parts. So you know, some time ago, that was recognized by ourselves and other people in the sector as a problem, and a problem that could be addressed with a solution. There are different ways about of bringing a solution. Some of the big guys in the industry have really just focused on how to try and tie together their own patchwork and maybe into a single contract, for example. And all they've really done is kind of internalized the patchwork nature of the marketplace inside themselves, different technologies, different SLAs, different processes, very little commonality. Our model is a little different, and there are some others that do variations of our model. We're a SaaS platform. Within that, we're supporting today 15 countries with a gross to net capability inside. By the end of this year, 2013, that will be beyond 21, 22 countries. Those are all the major GDP countries that we service directly in the platform through calculation and related services capabilities. And then we surround that with a network of partners. These are in-country-based partners, managed services organizations, small, medium-sized type organizations. Historically, these may be some of the people the multinationals used to go to, you know, country by country by country. But we take the pain away by organizing that for them, not only underneath a single contractual approach with SLAs that are common and sign-off and audit and approval processes for payroll that are common, but also with a common technology platform approach. So our customers get one view of the world, but their payroll gets done by us and our partners in a consistent, integrated way, supported by a SaaS technology platform, which is a good modern stack technology platform, as you'd imagine, that we'd have in this day and age. So that's how we do it. There are variations upon that, but there are very few players in this space, and it's a very early market. There are around 30,000 organizations on the planet with over 1,000 people and over 10 countries in operation, and really fewer than 1,000 of them have come to us or somebody else to solve this problem. So we're in the early adopter phase. I think the market's beginning to go mainstream. Our growth rate is going up, which is a sign of that. And I think that the solutions we and others have to that problem I described are here and now. And 10 years' time, all multinationals will do payroll this way.
What do you think, folks, what's the errors, or what do they get wrong when they do global payroll, when they first outsource it? Like, what do you see as like, okay, if we can just kind of right this wrong, global payroll will be much easier for the client, for the customer, et cetera. Like, what's the single biggest error that you see from folks
that
are...
Yeah, there's 3 or 4, I think. There's generally, some kind of event, some kind of experience in their organization which triggers them to look at this area, and then they realize that there are significant benefits across a range of different dimensions to doing something in the area. I'll give you an example. One of our larger customers said to me when we began doing business with them, I don't know how many people we get paid in China until it's been done and reported back to me by our outsourced provider over there. And the variances to our cost budgets, whilst they're not large variances, they are variances. And if those variances are all negative in the same fiscal period, a month or a quarter, across 80 countries, then, you know, what happens? You know, we'll miss our numbers. We're a public company. So, you know, we're not sufficiently in control. So, yet our people are getting paid, but we don't have sufficiently strong controls over that process, and we want to do something about that and be better. And that's a good example of a real, you know, fiscal hard benefit from taking an integrated approach to the problem. Another example at the other end of the scale maybe is just cost. If you're managing, say, 200 providers across 50, 60 countries, you know, 2, 3, 4 per country, you know, the vendor management, you know, within your own procurement and your own payroll coordination people in finance or HR, wherever they may be, the vendor management overhead that you have there is huge. And so if you do an analysis of all the time and effort that people are spending to manage, you know, these 200 different providers, you'll quickly see that there's a better way of doing it. So those are two examples. There are others. We sometimes see some fraud in far-flung countries as a trigger for these things, often not a large problem, but sometimes it's a trigger because of its sensitivity. So that's another example.
When one has employees and are all across the world, let's say, in other countries, what do they need from an HR perspective, from your perspective? I mean, we're talking a lot about payroll and how to get that done, and I believe payroll is probably the single biggest thing that you just can't make a mistake with. But what other kind of services layer do people need in different countries?
Well, it depends on the country primarily. I mean, there are some, you know, generic things that cut across all countries. Particularly in knowledge-based, technology-based organizations where, again, talent management is comprehensive as a need across the organization. You're right. Payroll is one of those things that you cannot afford to get wrong, so it's a foundation element of HR. And then whatever you layer on top of that depends on your organization, its market sector, its requirements. There's always a requirement, obviously, for core data, you know, system of record data to be held somehow. And people, you know, increasingly are putting in SaaS-based solutions for that from Workday and others. And we partner with Workday, and our customers, you know, are looking at the two solutions together. And in due course, I'm sure we'll overlay other capabilities, you know, on that as they seek to have a more uniform set of capabilities in this area. Because it's not just payroll that's patchwork. A lot of the systems of record and talent management and the other core foundations of the HR technology set, a lot of those areas are also quite patchwork across the global environment, which is, I think, why you see, you know, a lot of the major vendors building a suite-based approach. But, you know, in our world, very few people are doing payroll, and that's good for us. So we're progressing well in partnership with some of those guys.
Nice. Well, let's talk a little bit about the cloud. Obviously, with the rebranding of the name to CloudPlay, which I think is a wonderful name, by the way, you're a cloud solution. What does HR need to know about the cloud? Like, what's intimidating on some level, and, you know, once you kind of get to it, what's the value of the cloud, and what do you love about the cloud?
Well, I could spend the rest of the, I guess, 15, 20 minutes we have talking about this topic. I mean, cloud is one of those words that that is used by everybody. So I'll say what it means to us and what I think it means to our customers, and some of that value, as you say, will come out of that. I mean, the clear value, I think, for us and for our customers is very straightforward, and that is standardization, a common approach, you know, the same technology everywhere all the time for everybody. I think that's well established. If people are listening to a cloud discussion for the first time, then, you know, go Google that and spend a lot of time on it. But those of you that know what I'm saying, you know, we'll see that's a clear value. And that was our foundation, and that was one of the reasons why we chose the brand CloudPay to take us forward. Another area that I'm excited about in terms of what we can achieve in the future is to bring increasing levels of efficiency and therefore, in our case, price competitiveness, and payroll is a relatively competitive environment for pricing, as you'll be aware. Over time, we can use the cloud distributed processing to be able to control our costs for infrastructure in terms of our own infrastructure to manage our platform and ultimately pass on some element of that value to our customers. And in an environment which is relatively price competitive, as we've talked about already, that's certainly what our customers are looking for. How can you do this better and cheaper? And I think that is a general principle of cloud services in a business-to-business context too. There are some data privacy issues around the cloud today. I mean, we would love actually to have our data in the public cloud because obviously payroll is a batch processing environment, you know, once every pay period, that's monthly or weekly or biweekly or whatever it is. You do a fair number of calculations in a set period of time. That's what payroll is, and that lends itself very well to a pure cloud approach where processing is distributed and it just happens out there in the cloud on whichever devices, you know, Amazon or wherever else you're using in the public cloud context, you know, can offer you. And we don't do that yet. Our customers like to know where the data is. So it's in defined data centers that we manage at this time. But I can see a future where that will become apparent and the data privacy concerns will ease. Those concerns generally are political and social rather than legal. And then we can begin to offer increasing economic benefits by driving the price down as we scale that kind of cloud processing. But that's a number of years out. So those are some thoughts. So we chose the new brand to reflect those things and other things and to really point to that future of really processing payroll, you know, regardless of where you are in a cost-effective and efficient and obviously compliant way.
Well, I love your name, and I love the rebrand.
Well, thank you.
If you don't mind, take us into your process. What did you – here you are running a company. It's got an established brand, and you're rebranding to show this new vision of the future, and you come upon a name. You come upon a brand. Like, tell us, A, the process, but also I want to gain some insight into what you learned through this entire rebranding process.
Sure, yeah, there's a number of different facets to that, and there's some really key, interesting learning for me from a marketing perspective, which I'll maybe come to at the end. But well, I came to the company about 2.5 years ago and began talking with all of our customers and began to hear from our customers that the previous name of the technology platform was something that they found a little bit confusing. Some people pronounce it in different ways. You know, I won't share what that is because it's a piece of history now. So we decided to choose a new name just for the platform. So that's the technology service that people use to interact with those, you know, view pay slips, you know, the payroll managers view the audited payroll and sign off on it. That's the technology platform that has the GrossNet capability embedded in it and so forth, as distinct from a set of services, managed services that we offer, which is sort of overlay that platform. So we actually renamed the platform CloudPay because it's a SaaS platform and it was a good name and, you know, some of our customers really liked it when we suggested to them and a couple of big ones, you know, really loved it and so that made a big difference to us. So we renamed the platform around about 15, 16 months ago, so a good 12, 13 months before we renamed the company. And so the idea there was to socialize the name of the platform, get it used certainly within our customer base and across our partner base. Before we then went ahead and rebranded the company. And obviously it was a path, and we wouldn't have rebranded the company if there wasn't good, strong, positive recognition and appreciation of the name for the technology platform, which there was in that 12-13-month period. So after 3 or 4 months of good reception, we began to plan rebranding the company. And I wanted to do this in a way that, you know, well, quite frankly, didn't involve spending you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars on the fairly traditional marketing campaigns that you would see when somebody goes through such a rebranding. So I'd rather invest that money in R&D to increase our technology platform and provide better service to our customers. So we set about trying to figure out how to do this using social media and using the generic mechanisms of our world, if you will, to get it done without, you know, investing a great deal in advertising and all those other sort of old world, as I think of them now, marketing mechanisms. And so we prepared well. We did a lot of briefings. You know, we spent time to build up our Twitter following and all the things that you do in the social media context. And then we pressed the button in October of last year. And it's been very, very good. It's been straightforward transition from our perspective. The activity from an inbound demand generation perspective, the number of people calling us and sending us emails asking us to call them, has quite frankly shot up, which I think for me is the acid test of the rebrand being successful. And we haven't come across a single person that's criticized it at this point in time. And just one final little interesting point for marketers, the logo, which is obviously a half a globe with a cloud shadow across it, hence the global payroll, is inculcated into that that single logo for those that have looked at it. That costed $200. We went on to one of these crowdsourcing websites, said what we wanted to do, and a guy somewhere at his computer with whatever Adobe technology he was using in the Philippines created this and sent us it, and we paid him $200. And so that's a you know, a good lesson in how to get things done, which are very creative and very cost-constrained in a marketing context.
Well, Andrew, this is Brian. That is a kick-ass story. I absolutely love that you shared, again, that it you didn't spend, you know, $375,000 on that logo, you know, and go the traditional route. So let me do a quick reset. Everybody listening to Drive Through HR, Brian William talking with Andrew Pearson. To continue on kind of down that path, let me give you some context here before I ask the question. We've all probably been involved, and a lot of people potentially are maybe thinking we should rebrand solves the problem, or it's a repositioning, and that's a big deal. Even when you pragmatically do it, it's still a big deal for a lot of different reasons.
Sure.
And I've made a mistake in the past in doing that of what I thought was like the perfect thing to do, and it was unnecessary and caused some issues. So I'm still probably, you know, am trying to figure out the why of that. So what's the biggest single positive and negative that you've seen from the rebranding exercise, just for you personally, as you process and maybe think back and reflect a little bit of I could have navigated this differently, or that was really spot on. It's hard to top the logo story, but just curious.
I guess so. I mean that is the answer to the single biggest positive thing. I almost feel like it all came together when we had the name, and then the icing on the cake, if you will, was when we got this great logo, you know, in this great way, as I described. And so I began to feel good as we headed towards the day, October 22nd, where we pressed the button. And I began to feel, you know, that it was all going to work out. And so I think ultimately the quality of the brand, I think, is the key watchword there. And the things that didn't go so well, there's a lot to do in these things. You have to change the entity
sure.
name of the company. You have to do, you know, you have to change your dial-ins for your conference calls for your customers. I mean, there was a, you know, a spreadsheet. In fact, it was a Microsoft project sheet because it was so complex and long, right, of things to do. But actually, that also had a bit of a silver lining. I was a little bit, I balked when I saw the scale of the physical activity that we had to do. But actually, the silver lining was great because it involved virtually everybody in the company. Everybody had to do something, and obviously a good number of people had to do a lot of stuff. And so that allowed us to galvanize, you know, in a cultural way, the company behind the new identity and the new brand, rather than just, you know, standing up one day and saying, hey, guys, we changed the name of the company, isn't this a nice logo? So everybody had to do something, and that made a big difference to people believing in it.
Nice. Andrew, when you hear the terms big data, what kind of comes to your mind? Are you kind of over it? Are you in love with it? Do you think it's our future? Do you think HR should embrace big data, et cetera? What's your take on big data?
I was having a discussion with my 5-year-old son actually a couple of days ago because he saw that phrase on a piece of paper that was on my home office desk. And you know, big is a word that when you're 5, you know, you understand, you know, unlike payroll. So, you know, he wanted to talk about what this was. And I actually found it pretty difficult to describe to, you know, him or my wife standing behind him with a smirk on his face what it really was. You know, he wasn't going to really get it, of course, and she didn't either. And I think that's part of the problem here because, you know, it means too many different things for too many different people, and it's too amorphous right now as a phrase. But I think it's getting at something really important, and it's something that's a little bit of an important part of our medium-term future. Right now, as I said earlier, you know, fewer than 1,000 of the 30,000 multinationals on the planet have done, you know, our kind of thing, either with us or somebody else, and you know, it's going to be some years before a good proportion have done it. You know, we don't have that many customers, really, and we don't have a statistically significant number of customers for us to be able to do, you know, some of the things we'd love to do, which is look at salary levels, you know, look at other compliance elements and how those feed through and compare countries and all that kind of stuff. But I can see a time when we will have enough data in our platform to be able to use that data in somewhere, either to advise ourselves, advise our customers, maybe even make a business out of it. I think that's a number of years away. So from that perspective, having a big amount of data, you know, is valuable to, you know, really any company that's building a cloud platform, because you're going to have that data and you're going to be able to use or monetize that data in some valuable way in the future. So that's how I see it at a vendor perspective. If I think about our customers, You know, actionable insight, you know, is still a long way away. I've never really worked in any company, and I've worked in big ones and small ones and ones that started from nothing, and I've experienced this along the way. I've never really worked in an environment where you have good quality, actionable insight, you know, based out of knowledge, which obviously starts, you know, from the collection of data. So I think, you know, this whole interest in this area is driven by, you know, the unfulfilled demand for good quality decision-making knowledge that many people want. And if I look beyond that, and again, turn back to the vendors, I think the reason for that comes back to what we were talking about at the beginning of the show here, which is that there's just a patchwork of systems out there. And so I think, you know, the big data movement for me, you know, it's going to fail if it's really all about knitting together another, you know, set of patchwork systems and leaving them in place. It's only going to really succeed, I think, if you move to, you know, cloud-based systems where you have common data models, common metadata across those data models, common processes for managing, updating that data at the global level. And we're a long way from that. But with what we're doing at CloudPay, what Workday's doing, what other people are doing in this area, I can see that future is going to come to pass. It'll be some years, but it will come.
Nice. You've traveled the world, and you've got clients and partners all across the globe. I've got to ask you the question around what it's like to do business with folks here in the United States. What are we? What's interesting and curious and fun about us, and what's strange about the folks in the United States?
That's an unfair question. why are you asking me about the United States? You could ask me about any of the 120 countries that we currently serve as payroll in. Through our platform, and the answer will be different. Everybody has their differences. Everybody has their similarities. Everybody has their idiosyncrasies. You know, you guys are obsessed with a bunch of sports that no one else on the planet is interested in, and I could, you know, find the same idiosyncrasies elsewhere. From a business perspective, there's increasing commonality, actually, particularly in our world, because obviously, as I've said, we service multinationals. And multinationals, yeah, they have a headquarters. They have a place where they began. But they're increasingly, you know, multinational in their flavor and in the way in which they're managed. You know, our own company is a little bit of an example of that. Obviously, I have a British accent. I happen to be in London right now. I was in Singapore last week. I'll be in New York and San Francisco next week. That's how our lives are lived right now in this global company, and we're no different. You know, we are an American corporation. You know, our HQ, our Topco, if you will, HQ in a legal sense is a Delaware Inc. these days, and that's not uncommon to have this, you know, history that starts one place, but then you end up, you know, in an environment which has a lot of different mixes and a lot of different elements to it. You know, I was with one of our major customers recently talking about what they're, you know, they're doing, and that's a U.S. corporation, and it's very well known as a U.S. corporation, but increasingly it's investing in Asia and Latin America. That's where its growth is really coming from. You know, its executive team is increasingly, you know, globalized from different culture and nation-state domicile backgrounds. And if you looked at that company 10 years ago, you know, it was basically a North American executive team, and now it's not. And that's not uncommon. So I think that, you know, that mixing, that commonality is a real feature of our market segment, multinationals. And in a way, it's self-selected. The more integrated, sophisticated, culturally diverse a corporation is, the more likely it is to want to, you know, take the benefits of a cloud pay approach to payroll.
Perfect. Well, Andrew, we're just about out of time, and real quick, everybody, jump on 30-minute Twitter chat coming up. People chat at hashtag People Chat. Gonna blow it out here for 30 minutes on the Twitters. So jump onto that stream. Andrew, thank you so much for coming on. It was a great show. The rebranding exercise, excellent. You guys are crushing it. Enjoyed kind of hearing kind of the where you're at today. So can't wait to see kind of how things go in the future, and look forward to actually meeting you in person sometime in 2013. So.
Well, thank you guys. I appreciate the time and a good conversation. And I'll be at HR Tech and a bunch of other shows. If you guys and anybody else listening wants to come find me, please do.
And everybody connect on the Twitters, the Facebooks, the whatever social grid you can get to. Andrew's hell of a guy, hell of a play, love the cloud, folks, we are out of here. Have a happy Tuesday.
The face of the earth and gone, shot into space, 'cause she's a deleter, I'm a repeater, she's a deleter.